The pure in heart are basically those whose hearts are uncorrupted by outside influences. In other words, except ye become as a little child, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of God. Why is that? Because the child has an uncorrupted heart. He's just born with, and he's looking, and his heart is not corrupted by anything until somebody comes and becomes his outside God. What we have to do is become a child to that extent, not a child. People take this the wrong way sometimes and think we should be kind of uneducated and a little bit ignorant. We shouldn't become a child in that way. There's nothing wrong with becoming educated and learning, but to have that attitude that all things are possible, that everything that you're saying may or may not be true, to find out, to be receptive to whatever is taught. And many people, if I were to give the same lecture in in the local ward here, the reception would be entirely different. Almost everybody would get up and walk away when I was 10 minutes into a presentation like this, because their heart is not receptive to whatever, to all possibilities. They're only receptive to what has been established by an outward authority. They're not looking toward the inner authority. And that outward authority is so difficult to overcome, but it must be overcome to build Zion, because we cannot gather the pure in heart unless there are pure in heart. And to produce people that are pure in heart, because a person that is not pure in heart can become pure in heart. He can become pure in heart by overcoming the mark of the beast. And what is the mark of the beast? The mark of the beast, what it is totally different than you've been told in all the religious literature. The mark of the beast isn't like an actual mark that's put on your right hand. You ever notice that Hitler put a mark on the left hand of all the Jews? What do you suppose he did that? Because a lot of people thought he was the beast. And he says, well, the beast is supposed to put a mark on the right hand. So I'll fool them, I'll put a mark on the left hand. So he put a mark, he marked all the Jews on their left hand. And which I found quite interesting. And he put the Nazi sign on the left arm. So that Nazi sign wouldn't be on anybody's right arm. That way nobody could associate Hitler with the mark of the beast. So that's quite interesting, but he was an epitome of the beast. And it just illustrates that he tried to get out of being the beast by an illusion, because he was escaping something that wasn't really the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast is not a little mark on your right hand or your forehead. It talks about people who escaped the mark of the beast in Revelation chapter 14, 144,000 that follow Christ wherever he goeth. And these people had a mark in their forehead that was different from the mark of the beast in the forehead. What was that mark? Does anybody remember? Yeah, they followed the Lamb, but what was the mark in the forehead of those who followed him? The name of God in their forehead was the mark that followed those who escaped the mark of the beast. Okay? Well, what does that mean? Name of God in their forehead. Why would the name of God in your forehead allow you to escape the mark of the beast? When you understand what the mark of the beast is, it makes perfect sense. The mark of the beast is on the right hand. And I've written a treatise on this. You can look it up online and get further details. So I'll just cover the basics of it, and then you can look up the rest of the information. It's free on the internet if you want to look it up. The right hand symbolizes labor. The forehead symbolizes thought. Okay, the mark of the beast, and he's called the beast. Part of the reason he's called the beast is because those who follow him are herded like animals. An animal doesn't think, but it's herded, and where it's herded, it has to go. It has no choice in the matter. It just accepts the master, the shepherd or the master or the herder or the whoever it is that's controlling the beast, and he has to go where he's told and produce what he's told to produce, and he has no choice in the matter. So those who have the mark of the beast on the right hand, which symbolizes labor, are those who work for some authority just because they're told to do it. They don't think about it, but they work because they're told. Now this happens in religion, politics, government, organizations all over the world. Medicine, this appears all over the world. In other words, somebody tells you, you must do this type of labor, and so you do the labor. This is what you must do to be approved by God, to be approved by your government, to be approved by American Medical Association, be approved by the attorney's organizations. This is what you must do for your labor. And this authority that tells them to do it is what I call an unproven authority, an unjust authority. There's two types of authorities. Let's pick an authority speaking Spanish, for instance. If an authority speaks Spanish, or a teacher speaks Spanish, or is going to teach it, he says, I am an authority, I can teach you Spanish. Okay, now the wise student will say, well, speak some of it, I want to make sure that you're good at it. So prove to me that you're good at it. So the teacher brings a Spanish kid up and he speaks to him back and forth. Spanish kid says, yep, he can speak Spanish really good, no accent or anything. He's really great. Okay, so he's proven that he can do it. The other Spanish teacher can't really speak it very good. And the student says, prove to me that you can speak Spanish. And he says, how dare you challenge me? He says, I have credentials and I can speak Spanish as well as anyone, but I don't need to prove it. Just sit there and obey. Okay, and attend the class. Okay, this is an unearned authority. He has not proven he can speak Spanish. He's not proven he can teach it. One is a just authority and an earned authority. The other is an unearned authority. In the system of the beast does not have to earn his authority. He's just granted it. He's granted it, and because he's in a system where the authority is recognized, we are supposed to obey without question. How many times has just a regular member of the church, for instance, studied the scriptures and he thinks, I wonder if the prophet realizes this. And, and he may, or I wonder if the bishop realizes, I wonder if the stake president does. Or he may read something in your school textbook and say, I wonder if my physics teacher understands this theory of relativity I've been studying. And it's quite possible that they don't understand any of it as good as you do, that you are actually a better authority than they are. If they're an unproven authority and you feel an obligation to follow them, then you have the mark of the beast on the right hand. So what's a mark of the beast in the forehead? The forehead symbolizes thinking. Reminds me of a friend of mine, a guy we were talking to, me and Curtis, some years ago. And we asked him what he thought about a certain thing about out of the scriptures. And he says, I don't know what I think. I'll go talk to my bishop and find out what I think. So we thought that was funny, you know. But the sad thing is it's very true. A lot of people don't know what they think. They think, well, I'll go talk to the authorities and find out what I'm supposed to think about this. Now, if you have this attitude, you have the mark of the beast in the forehead. If you're a member of the Democratic or Republican Party and you say, well, I just go ahead with this because my party believes it. If you're not really thinking it out for yourself, but just going along with it because your party tells you to, or because everybody else is going along with it, you still got the mark of the beast on the forehead. Don't need to be a member of religion. If you're a doctor and maybe come across some herbs or something that may help somebody, and some association, American Medical Association or whatever association they belong to, local hospital group, tells them, no, you can't do that. He's got the mark of the beast in the forehead and also his right hand. It influences his labor and also his thinking. He can't think about herbs now because he's told that he cannot maintain his status if he recommends these oddball healing methods. He's controlled by an unjust authority. He has a mark of the beast in the forehead and the right hand. In order to become pure in heart, one must escape the mark of the beast. And his authority, his only infallible authority, is his soul. And it's found in the doorway to the heart and also connected to the mind. As the Revelation says in the Doctrine and Covenants, behold, I will reveal to you in your heart and in your mind. In your heart and in your mind. But the heart is the doorway to the soul that must be open. And then it opens the higher mind to all types of revelations that you can receive without the static of the beast out there. Now those who have escaped the beast, it says, and Revelations 13 is all about the beast, but then we switch to the next chapter. Revelations 14:1 tells us about those who escaped the beast. The 144,000, a symbolic number, not an ultimate number. There can be, everybody on earth can be part of that number if they want to. But the number has quite a bit of different shades of meaning that we don't have time to go into. But it's not a limiting number, let's just establish that. But these people have the name of God in their forehead. And what does that mean? If the name of God is in your forehead, then where is God? Where would God be? If the name of God is in your forehead, where is God for you then? Within, right? He's within your forehead and within your heart. Those who recognize the name of God in them, recognize that Clayton over here, recognize that Clayton is a part of God. He's an extension of God. God created man in the beginning after his image. The word image comes from a Hebrew word which designates an exact duplication. So he's just not a part of God. He's an extension. He's a total duplicate of God. And everything that belongs to God is available in his forehead. By looking within, the kingdom of God is within you. He looks within and he finds that his own name, Clayton, is really God's name because he's an extension. He's made in the image of God. He's a reflection. He's a reflection of God. In the beginning, God created man by reflecting himself. You ever look in a mirror? Two mirrors? One placed here and one placed in back of you, you see an infinite reflection. Well, you are like a reflection of God. And there's all kinds of reflections of God walking about, and each one of us has all the potential that is in God is in us. That's why when we talked about earlier, somebody's starving over here, and he's praying to God for somebody to help him. If Clayton stops and helps him, he's going to thank God. But who should he really be thanking? One of the reflections of God over here, Clayton, acted as one of the thoughts of God, helping one of the other thoughts of God a little bit along the path. And without Clayton doing that, then the guy would not have got helped. Might have starved to death. Okay. And like I say, when Clayton helps this guy, he's going to be thanking God. But it's God working through Clayton that really helped him out. So we have to establish this purity to have the name of God recognized. The name of God is already in you. No matter, even if a person follows the beast 100%, he's still got the name in him. It's just the outer name is the beast name. The inner name is the name of God. And we must find that name within us. And when we find it, then all the powers of the beast lose themselves. And we'll have absolutely no power over that disciple from that moment on. And when he reaches that moment to where the outward authorities, and the outward authorities can be many different things. Prophet, priest, king, political reader, a book, even the Bible itself, or even Jesus himself, if he were here, could be a beast to us if we accepted him in the wrong way. A man came up to Jesus one time and says, good master, tell me this thing. And he says, do not call me good. There is only one good, one person that's good, and that's God. Now, why did he say that? He did not want that person to look on his physical form as God. He wanted to that man to reflect back upon the inner God within. That's why he told him there is none that is good but God. And where is God? It's within. If you're going to find the good, even if Jesus were right here in this spot, we may not be able to find the good by looking upon him. After all, when he died, he only had 120 followers. Everybody else thought he's rebel or reprobate or evil or the devil himself. They didn't see the good there. Because the only way they can see the good in him is to see the good in the God in themselves. And when they see God in themselves, that the name of God is in your forehead, if you want that which is true, you look within for verification. One principle that I teach, that doesn't mean that you have to avoid the outward world. We look on the outward world for stimulation. What I'm giving you right now is just stimulation. But you look within to verify. Look without for stimulation. Look within to verify what stimulation makes sense and what doesn't make sense. What's true and what's not true. But so what I'm saying isn't a complete waste of time trying to stimulate everybody. You're throwing out a lot of information, ideas, principles, but you'll never know if they're true or not unless you find the name of God within your forehead, within your heart, and verify from within. When you get that verification from within, then you can know for an absolute surety that you're on the right track. There's a tremendous number of people just don't know what their next step is. It's they're just reaching for it, and they don't know, and they fall back on some authority, tells them, this is what your next step is. I know what you need to do. This is it. And when they let somebody else dictate that next step, then they have the mark of the beast on the right hand and the forehead. We must free ourselves from that mark, go within, and get the verification from within. This is exemplified in the parable of the 10 virgins. 10, 5 are wise and 5 are foolish. The wise virgins had oil in their lamps, were all trimmed and all ready to go. The 5 foolish virgins just had a little bit of oil in their lamps, and they didn't have enough to go upon the dark path to meet the bridegroom. And then the bell rang, and the bridegroom came at an unexpected hour. And the 5 that were foolish said to the 5 that were wise, says, share with us your oil so that we can have enough to meet the bridegroom. And they said, well, if we share with you our oil, none of us will make it, because we won't have enough oil and you won't have enough oil. So we're better off to take our oil and we will go meet the bridegroom. Now go to those that sell and buy some oil. Who are those that sell? Those that sell are the beastly authorities that sell you the Spirit of God. For your money, they will tell you what to do. Those who are wise have the oil within. And it even says this in the Doctrine and Covenants explaining that parable, that the oil is the Spirit of God within. So the oil is a lamp that burns within the heart and within the mind. The wise virgins are those who have enough oil in their inner lamps to be able to shed light upon the path until they're able to arrive at the feet of their Lord. And that is the important thing. And these are the pure in heart, the ones that have enough oil to sustain themselves. Because remember what I said at the beginning? That the beast wears out the saints of God. Wears them out. How many people here have felt worn out in one thing or another? And it's easy to get worn out. Even in your regular job, trying to make a living, oftentimes you feel almost worn out trying to pay the bills. And then if you keep plugging away, sooner or later you do, you arrive on top of things, but it may not seem that way for a while. And on your spiritual path, the same thing. We get worn out by all that static outside, all the pulls. Even if you try to do a simple thing like, say, quit smoking, all of a sudden you meet everybody comes out of the woodwork offering you free cigarettes, trying to get you to smoke again, because if you quit smoking, that makes them look bad, so all your friends try to get you back in the habit again so they don't feel like they got to quit. And so whatever you try to do that's good, these forces come try to wear you down and wear you out. This is why you need the oil of the Spirit within you. You need a sufficient supply. And if you give up your supply and relinquish it, then they will wear you out. You cannot give up that supply within you. You must put attention and focus on the Spirit within you to make sure you have enough oil and inner fire to be able to weather all the storms that come. Because whenever you go up on a higher path, the storms will come. The rays go in and out of incarnation, but all the seven rays are always influencing us, because we as individuals incarnate the seven rays within us in our various bodies. So even though the fourth ray may be out of incarnation, we still may have our mind may be strongly influenced by the fourth ray. But when he speaks about a ray being in or out of incarnation, he's talking about the planet Earth as a whole. It's various bodies and parts of it are governed by three or four of the rays which are incarnation at any given time. So even though for the entire planet, ray four is out of incarnation, for you as an individual, it's maybe in incarnation within your little sphere of influence. But when a ray is in incarnation for the whole planet, then its influence is very powerful. The most obvious of this is a sixth ray, which has been in incarnation several ways. It's been in incarnation through the whole planet, and also it's a very strong influence of the sign of Pisces. So you have it influencing through the sign of Pisces, and also being in incarnation on the Earth has made it very powerful. Especially during this Piscean age, which is a water age to begin with, and then influenced strongly by Ray 6. And this is another meaning of the beast, which is number 666. Interpreting it by the Ray influences, meaning that six influences the sign of Pisces. Six influences the emotional body. So if we're governed by our emotions, we're governed by the number six. And if our emotions govern the mind rather than the mind govern the emotions, then the mind is governed by Ray 6. And if the actions of the physical body are also governed by emotional impulse, then the body is governed by Ray 6. So you have six mind, six emotions, six physical activity. That's 666, the number of the beast, which means it makes us not much greater than the beast, because we're governed just by pure raw emotion with no mind. And see, this is the way the animals are governed. They're governed by what their feelings, their feeling and instinct. And they're governed this way, and they're herded into wherever somebody with a mind will herd them. Now, if we allow ourselves to be herded about by religions and the authorities of the earth, the authorities govern our actions, the authorities govern our minds and our feelings, then we are governed by the 666. And in the coming new age, we're going to be governed by the ray of the seventh ray, and also the fifth. And so our purpose here is to learn to think, to be able to escape the mark of the beast. And of course, the mark of the beast is governed by two things. One, the mark in the right hand, symbolizing that you're governed by emotional power, governs your work. And the mark in the forehead, showing that emotional power without thought will govern your thinking, will eliminate your power to think and make decisions based on what you decide. Instead, your thinking and actions will be based on what somebody else has decided for you. So if you're in a good old time religion and the authorities in that religion tell you what to think and tell you what the scriptures mean and tell you what you can do and what you can't do, then you're governed by the power of the beast. And when John saw in his vision, he saw that 144,000 escaped the power of the beast because they had the mark of the Father in their forehead. The mark of the Father in their forehead symbolizes that those who can look within and escape the power of the authorities without and be governed by the soul within are those that escape the mark of the beast. And it's interesting that the Bible says that the power of Antichrist was already in the world at the time the apostles were alive. So it's just not something we're waiting for some big Antichrist to show up. He's been here all along, you know. And the power to escape has been here all along. And the power to escape lies within each one of us. And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his heads ten crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Why is he called the beast? He's called the beast because like attracts like. And he controls people like they are beasts. And what does a person that herds cows does? He herds them, and the beast has to go in the direction that he's told to go. If he doesn't, he gets whipped or something, or does something to him. He's forced to go the direction of the person that herds the beast. And the beast in the book of Revelation is a great beast herder. And what he tries to do is reduce all humanity who are not supposed to be beasts into beasts. Into beasts of burden where they do exactly what they're told to do. He has seven heads symbolizing seven great kingdoms since the last great Adam. And we're in the seventh head right now. And ten horns symbolizing ten divisions of humanity. There's ten religious divisions and ten political divisions in the world. And upon his heads, crowns. Crowns symbolize a kingdom and a king, and a beast works through king-type rulers that have life and death power over their subjects that can command them, and they have to obey. And upon his heads, the names of blasphemy. The names of blasphemy are all the names that those who represent the beast use. In the religious world, it's like your holiness, your righteousness, reverend, father, all these names are names of blasphemy which are on the heads of all the religious rulers. All the religious leaders have these names, rabbi and father and reverend and holy priest and all these things, your holiness. All these names are names of blasphemy. And in the political world, we have the names of blasphemy also, your excellency, your highness, your most righteous one or whatever, all kinds of names that people call the king. These are also the names of blasphemy that are upon the beast. When George Washington became president, he insisted he just be called Mr. President, he says, because that's what I am. He didn't allow anyone to call him a name that was recognized by the beast. He didn't allow a name of blasphemy to be applied to him. And he gets a lot of credit for that. He's probably the first man in history to refuse the power that the people wanted to bestow upon him. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. The beast is like a leopard because it's quick to destroy any enemy, anybody that threatens him. His feet are like the feet of a bear because it can put pressure under anyone and trod under his feet anyone that gets in his way. And his mouth is the mouth of a lion. When a lion roars, it puts a fear of God in everybody. And when an agent of the beast says, off with his head, he has that power to be off with the guy's head. And the dragon, which represents illusion, gave him his power and his seat and his great authority, and he did it all through illusion. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and the deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. In the physical realm here, we have the seventh head, and it was wounded to death when? Anybody read the book? It was wounded to death by the Constitution of the United States. Brought freedom, and George Washington refused to accept the name of, a name of blasphemy, and they established a free country that was free from the power of the beast, and it wounded the seventh head as if it were to death. It looked like the seventh head was now going to die because freedom was going to spread all throughout the world. But the deadly wound was healed. How was the deadly wound healed?
Bureaucracy.
Right, bureaucracy. We have the everything was supposed to be done by elected leaders, but what happened? We began to appoint all kinds of leaders. Everybody in the IRS is appointed. Nobody there is elected, and that's the most scary organization that we have. And all kinds of people with authority over us are now appointed and not elected. There's no way to get them out of office. If we want to get rid of these people that have all this power over us, there's really almost no way that we can do it. This heals the deadly wound. And the deadly wound is being healed as more and more authority comes over individual lives in this country. People don't realize how far removed we are from the way our country was set up. The Boston Tea Party was a tax revolt over a few pennies tax. Now, the average, a lot of people pay over 50% of their income to tax, and that's a lot more taxing than the early colonists were complaining about that started the Revolutionary War. And they complained, no taxation without representation. Well, we got a lot more taxation without representation than they ever dreamed of. And the power, the deadly wound was healed, and the authority over the lives of individuals is being brought back to us again. And more laws, each with all kinds of laws are unnecessary. Oh, one guy suggested we spend two seasons making laws and one season undoing all the unnecessary laws. So the deadly wound was healed. And there was given him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given him to continue how long? 40 and 2 months, or again, 3.5 seasons. 3.5 seasons, the beast has power to continue. And he opened his mouth to blaspheme against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. So the power of the beast blasphemes God by presenting an image of God that is not real, and having us worship an outer image of God rather than the God within. And there was given unto him to make war with the saints or the enlightened, and to overcome them, and power is given him over all kindreds, nations of the earth. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are written in the book of the life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. The word worship comes from the Greek word that means kiss ass. Basically, is what it means. Or suck up to. Okay? So in other words, everybody in the world is going to suck up to some authority that's going to have power to completely control their lives and tell them what to do. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and it had two horns like a lamb and spake as a dragon. The beast that had the two horns like a lamb, the two horns like a lamb are symbolic of Christ. And a horn is symbolic of a power or a kingdom. And the two horns like a lamb stand for, the second beast was America, and it had two horns that was sanctioned by the hierarchy or by the Christ. The first was the establishment of a number of religious orders bringing greater light that were created in the United States. This is from Mormonism to Alice A. Bailey and Madame Blavatsky and the Science of the Mind and Unity, and many of these works that brought greater enlightenment to the world were right here in the United States. That's one of the horns. The second horn was the political system, the Constitution, and the free government that was started here. These were the two horns. And so this country had two horns representing the Christ, but it spoke the words of the dragon. The reason it spoke the words of the dragon, the deadly wound was healed, and instead of being ruled by the Constitution, we're ruled by bureaucrats that speak words of authority that tell us what to do and what to think. He exercised all the power of the first beast before him and causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And he doth great wonders that he maketh fire to come down out of heaven in the sight of men. Now, when did the United States bring fire out of heaven in the sight of men? Right, the word heaven comes from the Greek word uranos. And what other word comes from this Greek word?
Uranium.
So in other words, the United States brought fire out of uranium in the sight of men for everybody to see. So if we translate heaven as uranium, let's read it that way again. He doth great wonders. And who's done more wonders than the United States? We even invented the internet, right? But he doth great wonders. He maketh fire to come out of uranium on the earth in the sight of men. Doesn't that exactly describe what we did at the end of World War II? We brought fire out of uranium in the sight of men. And he deceiveth them that dwell upon the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell upon the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by the sword and did live. And he had power to give life to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast, that they should be killed. Now, one of the negative things the United States has done, now keep in mind, it has a righteous side, the two horns like a lamb, or the righteous side of the United States. But the fact that it speaks with the authority of the dragon is the negative side. So when did it make an image to the beast and give power? In other words, the beast had all this power over life and death, and the United States has done something to give life to an image of the beast. Now think back in the days of the Soviet Empire. What kept them alive? Whenever they had financial problems, we would send them money and food. We sustained that image of the beast. And who would not worship the image of the beast in the Soviet Union was killed or imprisoned. And capitalism, right here in the United States, many capitalist investors actually invested in starting the Bolshevik Revolution and financing the overthrow of the Tsar and the creation of communism. A lot of that was financed right here. Now let's look at another, North Korea. What do? We send them food, and does the food go to the poor people? No, it goes to the military. And to their military, and their military tells the people, do what we say or you will be killed. And who's their biggest trading partner now? China. Again, another totalitarian dictatorship, which if you do not play ball there, your life is in danger. Cuba. Cuba is financed still, even though we have embargoes. All kinds of people are sending their personal money to their friends in Cuba, and it keeps it alive, giving them power of the beast, life and death power over their subjects, so if they don't play ball, they get imprisoned or killed. In this way, the United States is sustaining the image of the beast throughout the world. If we would just quit helping the beast throughout the world, they'd all die. But we are sustaining them in power. If we hadn't started this trade relationship with China and concentrated like on India and Mexico instead, and we wouldn't have the big worry that we have now about the big military buildup in China. So we have given life to the image of the beast throughout the world. We acknowledge they're the enemies of freedom, and many of them are our enemies, but we still send them food and money to keep them alive and to sustain them. It's a strange situation. And the beast, it says, causes all, both rich and poor, free in bond to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. Now, what most people think this is going to take place is they say, well, we can't buy or sell unless we receive a mark in their foreheads or their right hand. It says that no man might buy or sell save he have the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So the interpretation today is, well, they're developing these computer chips that they can implant, so eventually we're going to receive a computer chip in our right hand, and when we go through a scanner, we got to pass our hand over the scanner, we won't be able to buy anything. Well, for one thing, even if that were true, you know, that if that wouldn't be that terrible of a thing, even if it was true, that that has nothing to do with the real power of the beast to bring terror in the hearts of mankind. Kim Jong-il, with no computer chip, creates terror in the hearts of his subject much greater than if somebody got a computer chip in their hand. And what's more, do you think if a dictator took over this country that he would put the chip in the right hand after reading this? Everybody knows it's there. That would make it obvious that, well, this guy must be the beast. He's put a computer chip in my right hand. It says either the right hand or the forehead. Now, people, and the interpretation is, well, if somebody has a hand missing, then they'll stamp it on to put the computer chip in the forehead. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. You go through a scanner and, yeah, here's my forehead. It'd be easier to put it on his foot, or a lot easier to put it on his other hand, or his elbow, or whatever stub he's got left, but you put it on the forehead, it'd be kind of silly, really. So why would they put the computer chip in his... Plus, it'd be kind of painful to put computer chip right in your forehead. I would say. It is possible that a tyrant could rise up and put some number on us all, but it happened. But what was interesting about Hitler is he obviously read the scriptures and decided, well, I don't want to be portrayed as a beast. And then his Nazi symbol, which arm did he put that on?
Left.
He thought he was escaping the mark of the beast by putting it on his left arm. Everybody put the Nazi symbol on their left arm. And I believe he did that because he didn't want to be associated with the beast. But unfortunately for him, he still screwed up because the symbol on the left arm, the Nazi symbol, symbolized the left-hand path. So unknowingly, trying to avoid looking like the beast, by history, he really turned into the beast because the symbol was symbolic on the left arm, symbolized the left-hand path. So that's quite interesting. He didn't get out of the symbolism after all.
Irony.
Yeah.
Plus, didn't the swastika spin to the left instead of the
right? Right, and it spins clockwise. Whereas there's two types of swastikas. One used by the Brotherhood of Light that goes counterclockwise, means the path of greatest resistance, and the Nazis use the path of least resistance, which is the path of materialism, and that's what their swastika stood for. Now, unfortunately, the Brotherhood of Light can't use a swastika now because Hitler just ruined it. So if we reverse direction and use the swastika, everybody would say, what are you, some kind of Nazi? They wouldn't recognize that it's going a different direction. So the swastika is pretty much out of commission for probably thousands of years. Now the true mark on the right hand symbolizes labor. The forehead symbolizes thought. People already have the mark on their right hand and their forehead. And in the book of John, written 2,000 years ago, it says, the Antichrist is even now already in the world. The beast was already there, clear back in the days of John the Revelator. And it's been there even before him. In other words, there's always been people, authorities that have ruled the world for the seven kingdoms of the world that have had the mark, placed the mark in the right hand of the forehead of everybody that are their subjects. They have to think the way they're told to think and work by the authority that they're told to work or they will be killed. I was just reading about back in the days of Martin Luther. Martin Luther and his followers, some of his followers and people who subscribed to his thinking were burned at the stake just for saying, hey, I like Martin Luther, you know? good guy. Well, we're going to burn you at the stake then. That's heresy. And so they roast him, and they roasted him not quickly, but slow. Slow roasted him, and then they lift him up just before they die and let him recuperate a little bit, and then they roast him some more. I mean, that's how cruel they were. Disemboweled others, burned others at the stake. And just for voicing an opinion. And it's been that way for thousands of years. We don't realize how lucky we are to be able to sit here in this room and talk. If we were transported just a couple hundred years ago, we'd all be burned at the stake just for having this meeting. And so we don't realize how fortunate we are. So people under the beast, now we go where the beast has full power, like North Korea. You have to think the way you're told to think. If you don't, you go in a re-education camp, and you have to work the way that you're told to work, or you will be killed. Here's wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of humanity. It says a man, but it's the number of humanity. And that number is 666. Six is the number of the Pisan age, and the Pisan age is governed by the strong authority of the beast. And the three sixes are symbolic of three levels of control. Control on the physical, control on the emotional, and control on the plane of the mind. When you have a beast that's in charge of you, you have to physically do what you're told to do, you have to feel the way that you're told to feel, and you have to think the way that you're told to think. If you don't have the six on you, recognizing strong control on all these three levels, you will be attacked by the beast and his agents, wherever they may be. Unfortunately, we don't have the control of the beast in America that some of the other nations have, but we've made an image to the beast over there. Now, it talks about people, though, that escaped the beast. Let me just go into that, and then we'll wrap it up. The very next verse in chapter 14, I beheld a lamb, and he stood upon Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written, where? In their foreheads. And the beast has his followers' number and name written, where? Hands and foreheads. But the followers, those who escaped the beast, find the name of God written in their forehead. In other words, as it started out in verse 4, he saw the throne of God in his forehead. He found the name of God in his forehead. And when we find that name, the beast represents a God on the outside telling everybody what to do, and that person on the outside speaks with the authority as if he were God standing there telling us what to do. Whether it be a religious leader or a political leader. For many Mormons, for instance, in the Mormon Church, Catholics in the Catholic Church, and other churches, if the religious leader speaks and says, jump, or you jump. If he says, you got to change vocation, or you got to marry this person, we got a revelation from God on it, well, you do it. Because you're under the control of the beast, and you're obeying this person on the outside who's taking the place of God, and that's what the beast is. He takes the place of God, and he's on the outside. You escape the beast by disregarding those on the outside that are taking the place of God, and you find the name of God is written in your forehead. Inside of yourself, you find God. Then you escape the mark of the beast.
Thanks for listening to the New Age Christian Synthesis podcast. If what you heard rang true and you would like to find out more, please visit J.J. Dewey's website at freeread.com. That's freeread.com.